Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio International. Before we begin today's program, I'd like to apologize for a mistake for those who are listening to this program via the World Radio Network. Last week, Tarmo Tanilso, who lives in Estonia, pointed out a mistake that we made on dates concerning the final broadcast in English from Radio Netherlands. And yes, indeed, there was a mistake. We actually had uploaded the incorrect program without the update being made to it. So, Tarmo, thank you very much for pointing it out to us. The version of the program that did go out on PCJ and through our partner stations didn't have the error. So, Tarmo, thank you very much for pointing it out to us. Anyway, it's that time of year again, which actually happens twice a year, when different broadcasters and organizations meet for something called the HFCC, which stands for High Frequency Coordination Conference. Now, HFCC is something that we have talked about a number of times over the last 6 years. But there's always, of course, something new to talk about the subject of HFCC. Well, this year, or rather this month, HFCC is taking place in Florida, USA. And what is in Florida, you might ask? Well, that, of course, is the home of WRMI, Radio Miami International. Joining us on the line now is Jeff White. This is the first time that it actually is happening in Miami, where you're located, right?
Well, in fact, it is, yes. And it is only the second time in the 26-year history of the HFCC that the meeting has been in the United States. The first time was in Dallas, Texas in 2011. Although, if we go back a little bit further, there was a meeting first in North America in 2001 in Montreal.
Now, the HFCC, how do they decide what cities to go to? Is it like the Olympics where everybody votes?
Well, it's kind of like the Olympics where people make bids for it, but not quite like the Olympics, though. It's wherever we can find someone who is willing to organize it.
Oh, really?
Sometimes there's more than one, but usually, I mean, this is twice a year, so we have to find two locations every year. Although, what has happened in recent years is there's an A conference, and the A conference is in late January, beginning of February, and then there's the B conference, which is in late August, early September. And the A conferences generally rotate or alternate between the, because we also, the HFCC has joint meetings with the ASBU, the Arab States Broadcasting Union, and the ABU, the Asia Pacific Broadcasting Union. So the A conferences tend to rotate between the ASBU and the ABU countries, and then the B conferences can be anywhere else.
Right. Well, I mean, let me ask you, because this has been going on for 25 years now. A lot has changed when it comes to the landscape of international broadcasters. There are broadcasters that have vanished completely, broadcasters that are no longer using shortwave. Some have changed name a number of times, like it was Radio Moscow, Voice of Russia, now it's Sputnik, whatever they're going to become next. It must be, did it start off with, like, let's say 300 people and it's now down to 50, or is that just kind of exaggerating it?
Well, actually, I think that I saw a picture the other day of the first meeting, which was in Bulgaria, in, I think, 1989, 1990. And I think there were like 40 people or maybe even less. So in that sense, the size of the meetings has gone up because we're expecting we'll probably have less than 100, but close to 100 here in Miami. So it's gone up, but it has gone, I would say it's stayed, since I have been attending in 2001, it's stayed around the same, maybe gone down slightly. Although I've seen the lists of shortwave frequency requirements, and a requirement is any transmission, you know, from this time to this time on this frequency. And the actual list of requirements has gone down over the years since around 1990. As you might expect, with a lot of the government broadcasters going out of business or scaling way back. Mm-hmm. But it's still, you know, the bands are still fairly crowded, and it can be hard to find frequencies certainly if you're looking for a frequency, to stay on one frequency for, you know, a long time, for a significant number of hours per day, it can still be very difficult.
Well, you know, actually, that's interesting that you say that, because for our service to Southeast Asia, there's one day out of the week that we actually have, instead of 1 hour, it goes out for 2 hours once a week instead of the 1 hour daily. And we actually have to change frequency midway through, because if we didn't, we would get interference from China or somebody else.
Yeah, these things happen, and of course that's why these meetings take place before each season begins, so that hopefully all of these collisions, as they're called, can be worked out before the season starts.
Now, technology, of course, has changed a lot since the first HFCC. I mean, right now we are talking over Skype, and there's all kinds of different forms of communicating through IP addresses and everything else. Does the HFCC now, for example, if people, for let's say budget regions, cannot send one or two or three people, can they also connect to it through the internet?
Yes, and there are a lot of organizations that do that. Uh-huh. They can, you know, there's a website where members can go and get the daily collision list. Because every day during the conference, and it's a five-day conference, I should say every night, there's a collision list produced, mm-hmm. based on the database at that point. And then the next day, everybody tries to eliminate their collisions. And they can, if they're not present at the meeting, they can take part, of course, going to the website and looking up the collision lists and communicating by email with people.
What areas are more common to have collisions, or it doesn't matter what part of the globe you're at?
That's a good question, and I'm not really sure. I would say I can tell you where most of the collisions, because I have at times at night actually passed out the printed collision lists to the various members there, and to their tables, and I can tell you the biggest collision lists are China, mm-hmm. Iran has a lot, of course the IVB, U.S. International Broadcasting Bureau, those are probably the biggest ones. But in terms of actual specific regions of the world, that's a very good question, and somebody should do an analysis of that, I guess.
Now, there are some broadcasters, of course, who have never sent anybody to the HFCC. I can think of two right away. It would be Voice of Korea from the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, or Radio Havana Cuba from Cuba, and there's probably some other ones as well. When the HFCC is sitting down, are there any type of discussions like, well, you know, we're not going to use around this place because we know the Koreans will, or the Cubans will, or whoever else?
Yes, well, you might be surprised to find that that Cuba actually did attend an HFCC conference once.
Oh, okay.
In South Africa back several years ago. But that was the only one. So, but no, they don't coordinate with the HFCC, unfortunately. And you're right, a few other countries like North Korea. And it's it can be difficult because you're sort of guessing, you know, whether those frequencies are going to be available or not. A lot of people, though, use databases like I think Bernd Friedewald has one, the International Listening Guide, and this sort of thing. So they will find out about perhaps usage or intended usage by some of these places. But it can be difficult. And, you know, a place, a particular broadcast can show up as no collision. And then once the season starts, there is a collision because of some of these Cuban broadcasts and from, like you say, North Korea, a few other countries.
Right. Now, one country, of course, that had a lot of space on the dial was Radio Moscow, and then later on, Voice of Russia. Are the Russians still attending these?
Well, as a matter of fact, I think here in Miami we have at least two Russians that I can think of. But what has happened, the Russian situation has become very complex, and there are different organizations doing the frequency coordination, because a lot of these sites have been privatized or organizations, private organizations, brokering airtime and selling airtime and all this. And so, yes, the we do have, like I said, at least two Russians coming to Miami, but they're not coordinating frequencies, as far as I know, for, what is it, Radio Sputnik now.
Mm-hmm. So who would they be coordinating frequencies for then? I mean, I thought that all HF broadcasts from Russia had ceased.
Well, there are still at least frequencies being coordinated for, you know, the private these private organizations who buy airtime,
okay.
And so the brokers for these various programs do show up and coordinate frequencies.
What about in this situation? I don't know if this has happened before, where a broadcaster will put a list of frequencies that they want to use, and everybody says, okay, you can use this one. But then partway, either through the A schedule or the B schedule, they're not using it. What happens to that frequency?
Well, that is what's called a wooden frequency. And it's something that the HFBC is constantly sort of battling against, trying to get organizations to put fewer wooden frequencies in their schedules, because a lot of times it's not even just halfway through the schedule. Sometimes they just never use them even from the beginning in the schedule. They're sort of there as backups in case they need them.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been various culprits in the past. The Russians are really big on this, the Greeks, and others that are not. It's less of a problem than it used to be, but it still does exist. And it can be difficult, you know, for, let's say, some of these commercial shortwave operations as well, because they have to sort of anticipate what their needs are going to be, you know, based on sales.
Mm-hmm.
And you're never quite sure what's going to happen. When somebody comes along and wants to buy some airtime, then you've either got to try and make another registration in the middle of the season, or else you try and put some airtime there as a backup, and you either use it for unpaid programming until some paid programming comes along, or some people leave it as wooden frequencies. And so that is a problem, but it's not as much as it used to be.
Right. What about the situation of, are there, I don't know if this has even been discussed or it's ever happened, but do broadcasters, how would I say, try to schedule too many frequencies? Is that allowed? I mean, can they just schedule as many as they want, or are there any restrictions?
There are no restrictions.
Uh-huh.
So
what you're saying then is, for example, let's say, like, if the Russians were there, they can start registering, like, 80 frequencies if they wanted to and never even use them.
Well, and this has happened in the past. But then sometimes people know that they're wooden frequencies, and they'll go and negotiate. And that's the purpose of the HFCC, one of the purposes. Somebody that wants to use one of those frequencies may go up to that delegation and say, "Look, we really need this, or we've used it in the past, or whatever," and try and negotiate the usage of it.
Right.
And usually, people will cooperate in that respect.
Right. Now, I still remember in the old days before the HFCC. When it came time at the end of the A season and the B season, there was usually about this 1 week of or sometimes even longer, of a complete mess with broadcasters on top of each other. And of course, the HFCC was created to resolve this problem. But does that problem still exist today, or is it a lot better than, say, what it used to be maybe 40 years ago?
I haven't heard of any major complications right around frequency change time. It's pretty much, you know, the same day, the last Sunday in October and the last Sunday in March.
But don't the Europeans do it at a different time?
Well, what can happen is that sometimes the time changes, the local time changes in North America and Europe are maybe a week or so off from the season change date, and that can create some problems, but they try to take this into account in producing the HFCC lists, so that changes may you know, they'll have it up to a certain hour UTC. After let's say the time changes in Europe a week before the season change, so they may have a change that occurs a week before the end of the A season, and then another change that occurs at the beginning of the B season. So this can happen, and it can be a little bit confusing sometimes. But it's basically due to the time changes in local areas, regions, rather than something that has to do with the HFCC itself.
Mm-hmm. One final question. Now, with HFCC just around the corner, taking place in Miami, if somebody was to go, and a broadcaster, let's say they had never been to HFCC before, what can they expect to happen in Miami? The same as in previous years, or something maybe even a little different?
Well, what usually happens in an HFCC is people are sitting around in front of laptops. Everybody has their own laptop at their table, and they go back. They're planning their frequency schedules, and then they go back and forth to the different delegations' positions in this big meeting room, and they coordinate their, you know, negotiate their conflicts and this sort of thing. And it happens from Monday through Friday. There are also a few talks and presentations. We're planning one on, guess what, DRM receivers. Also,
is there such a thing?
Supposedly there's going to be a new low-cost DRM receiver possibly revealed at the HFCC in Miami. We'll see. But then also there are a few talks, for example, about the new Madagascar World Voice.
Mm-hmm.
Another one about Voice of Hope Africa in Zambia. It's just been reactivated under new ownership. And if you we have a representative from the ITU, International Telecommunications Union, who is coming to give a talk about international frequency coordination. And I'm sure there will be a few other speakers. The meeting actually ends on Friday at noon, and then we're going to take a group of those who are interested from Miami up to Okeechobee, which is about 3 hours north by bus, and we'll have them visit the WRMI transmitter site, which is the largest shortwave installation in the Western Hemisphere.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll have a little barbecue in Okeechobee and a sightseeing tour, and then they'll stay overnight in Okeechobee and go back to Miami, and most of them will probably have flights back home the next evening.
Right. Jeff, thank you very much for talking to us today.
Well, thank you, Keith. Appreciate it.
And we will be bringing more on HFCC later this month, as Jeff White will be providing us audio of some of the sessions and discussions that are taking place. You're listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International.
The Spectrum Monitor is a monthly electronic magazine covering shortwave, amateur radio, scanning, satellites, Wi-Fi, and vintage radio, which is available for any device capable of opening a PDF file.
Category 105, it is speeded to total journal.
Speed 220, Category 105.
The Spectrum Monitor also covers amateur radio satellites, maritime and military monitoring on shortwave, reviews of receivers, scanners, and software used for shortwave, and more. Annual subscriptions for 12 issues is only $24, with individual monthly issues available for $3 each. If you're already a subscriber, you can renew your subscription by clicking on the Sign Up for 2015 button. MasterCard, Visa, Discover, and PayPal are accepted. For more details, visit our website at www.thespectrummonitor.com.
Now, before we get to this week's propagation, I just want to take a moment to tell you about a special upcoming program that will air on PCJ Radio International this month. The program will be broadcast on the 21st and 22nd of August, and it's going to be the second program in our continuing series from the Radio Netherlands archives. Now, you may remember last month in July, we actually had the first two-hour installment. Well, the next two-hour installment will be airing on those dates. Now, I should tell you actually a little bit about how the series is going to work. On the first program, it was pretty much well, a mixed bag of things from various different light entertainment programs at Radio Netherlands. But Radio Netherlands did so much more. So the series will be taking a look at a particular style and type of program produced by Radio Nederland. In program two, it'll be looking mostly at news and documentaries. In that program, you'll hear the voices of Ginger De Silva, Eric Beauchemin, Pete Myers, and many others. Like the first one, where we issued a special EQSL, the second one also has a very special EQSL. So, to get it, you have to tune in, send us some details on the program, and at least confirm to us that you actually listened. The times are in UTC. The first transmission is to Europe, from 6 to 8 hours UTC on 7780 kHz. That's August 21st, from 6 to 8 hours UTC on 7780 kHz. And then August 22nd, from 1 to 3 hours UTC on 7570. That's 1 to 3 hours UTC, August 22nd, on 7570. Do tune in, because the second program is going to have a couple of surprises that I think you'll definitely enjoy. Well, it's now time to turn our attention to propagation, what's been happening, and what we can expect. Here's our propagation editor, Glenn Hauser.
Keith from IPS in Australia, the global HF propagation forecast through August 6th. Normal at low and middle latitudes, normal to fair at high latitudes. From Space Weather South Africa through August 5th, magnetic conditions unsettled to active. Shortwave fadeouts unlikely, MUF unstable. From Met Office UK through August 7th, solar activity very low. Geomagnetic activity increasing up to active levels at times through the second half of August 7th. From Peter Coleman in Prague, the geomagnetic field will be quiet to unsettle on August 5th to 7th, 10th, 11th, and 19th. Quiet to active on August 8th, 9th, 15th, 16th, 20th, and 21st. Mostly quiet on August 12th to 14th, 17th, 18th, and 22nd. Quiet on August 23rd and 24th. From SWPC in Boulder, geomagnetic field unsettled to active on August 5th, 10th, 11th, 15th, and 16th, with ANK indices of 12 and 4. August 24th and 25th at 15 and 4. Otherwise, quiet to unsettled. Lowest A's and K's of 5 and 2 on August 9th, 13th, 14th, 17th, 20th to 23rd, 26th, and 27th. Solar flux rising from 75 August 4th to a peak of 95 August 8th to 14th, and down to 70 by August 23rd. Spaceweather.com reminds us the Perseid meteor shower peaks August 11th to 13th, but is already underway. Listen for bursts of FMDX. William Hepburn's VHF UHF microwave DX maps call for extreme tropospheric ducting all week off Southern California and Baja California. August 8th and 9th from the Bahamas to Puerto Rico. All week off the northwest coast of Africa, extending to Iberia August 8th and 9th. All week across the eastern Mediterranean, the Red Sea, the Persian Gulf as far as Pakistan, and off the coast of Angola.
Thanks, Glenn. And before we go, I just want to remind you again about our twice-weekly broadcast to the Americas. Wednesdays at 1 hour UTC on 11580 kHz, and that's a 1 hour broadcast. 100 hours UTC on Wednesdays on 11580 kHz, and that's predominantly targeted towards North America. And then on Fridays at 22 hours UTC on 9955 kHz. What can you hear on those transmissions? Well, on Fridays, you can catch Focus Asia Pacific and Vintage Media Network with Jonathan Marks. And on Wednesdays, well, really a mixed bag of things. Last week, actually, we had a jazz program from Radio Netherlands that we broadcast. And this coming Wednesday, I don't know. The only thing I can say is you'll really have to tune in. That's all I can say. We're going to be leaving you right now, but if you want to get in touch with us to let us know what you think of the program or have any ideas or suggestions, we'd love to hear from you. Our email address is mnp@pcjmedia.com, mnp@pcjmedia.com. Also, let us know how you heard the program, if it was on satellite, shortwave, AM, FM, medium wave, or through the internet. So until next time, friends, I'm Keith Powell, wishing you well, saying so long, take care. We'll see you again very soon. Bye-bye.
We'll be right back.